case on the docket is Bonce Cours St. Mary's Hospital versus Cynthia Jones. Good morning. Ms. Casper, do you need a rebuttal time?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, ma'am.
Certainly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Catherine Casper, and I represent Bonce Cours St. Mary's Hospital in this matter today. I'll refer to them simply as St. Mary's throughout my argument. We're here this morning on the March 24th, 2014, and April 15th, 2015 decisions of the Circuit Court of the City of Richmond. In those decisions, the Circuit Court refused to overturn the March 4th, 2013 final agency decision that was handed down by the Department of Medical Assistance Services, who I'll refer to today as DMAS. Your Honor, St. Mary's is a 391-bed nonprofit community hospital located in Richmond, Virginia. Notably, they're well known for its birthing center and state-of-the-art neonatal intensive care unit, otherwise known as the NICU. The final agency decision before the Circuit Court involved $424,718.50 in retractions made by DMAS, which represented the entire payment for services St. Mary's provided to 11 patients. 9 of those patients were pediatric patients, 7 of them patients in the NICU, the other 2 were adult patients.
While I appreciate the overview, it seems to me that given the way the regulations work and the way individual medical work, and it may not have been fleshed out entirely below the way, isn't this a record-by-record case? Either this individual record meets the standard or it doesn't. Either this record does or it doesn't.
It's true. The reason the overview is necessary is because while it is a record-by-record case, there are 3 specific types of records that were used. Really, 2. The NICU and the pediatric patients have the same essential form used that, as we'll discuss, satisfy the regulation and the manual for the same reasons. The 2 adult patients had a separate form. That form also satisfies it, but for different reasons. But as you referenced, Your Honor, there is a regulation and a DMAS guidance document at issue here. And what the Circuit Court found was that the documentation St. Mary's provided for these patients did not satisfy the requirements set out in the regulation in that manual. Rather than reading through and citing them because it would get lengthy, I'm going to provide just a brief description of what's provided overall when you look at the manual and the regulation together. The requirements we're looking at are for the documentation of the certification of need for inpatient care, and then the 60-day recertification requirement that any patient who is in the hospital for longer than 60 days would also require.
Well, I mean, I think we're well familiar with the regulations. And, there were these blanks in many of these forms. Now, you have a date. You have a signature. So the question is, what do we do? I mean, the hospital designed the form. And so what do we do with these blanks?
Well, I don't believe there are very many blanks, Your Honor. I believe that what the issue was, and I think that's where there's some of the confusion, is that...
Well, let me go ahead and ask about one that I've...
Go right ahead.
A very specific question about.
Sure.
It's located at page 335 of the appendix. And as you have pointed out, there are several that seem to have the same issue.
335? 335. Okay. Do you want me to walk you through?
Well, I'm going to ask.
Okay.
I think I know what the issue is,
okay.
And I'm going to ask you.
Go right ahead.
It appears from my review of the record that on this we have a date of admission of September the 26th and a note signed by a nurse practitioner. This isn't a recertification note. This is an admissions note. So a signature by a nurse practitioner, as I understand the regulations, is not sufficient. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that, right.
Okay. And so then we have... At some later point in time, after the nurse practitioner fills all out the admission paperwork, signs and dates the form, a physician comes along and countersigns it. Is that
so? Are you referring where under the physician's signature where the 2 signatures appear?
Well, and it also appears to be a slash at the bottom, or maybe she was signing on behalf of somebody.
Okay, I see the two. That's correct.
If you're the party with the burden of proof and the fact finder has found that this doesn't comply, can we conclude anything other than that at some point after the nurse practitioner signed it, a physician signed it, and is there anything on this that tells us that they signed within the time period allowed for by the regulations, which I believe as of 2009 was within 24 hours? what on the face of this form shows that a physician signed this within 24 hours?
Well, as I believe we're looking at the date and the time at the on the bottom right-hand corner of the form. Is that correct, Your Honor? Is that where you're pointing to?
Anywhere you want to tell me there's a date and time on this, I'll look.
That would be that's the date and time that I'm looking to, and I do see that there. So we have the physician signature and the physician and the nurse practitioner signing in the middle at the physician signature line, and then again down at the bottom. My interpretation would be that the date applies to both of their signatures.
I'm not asking for your interpretation. It's clear, it seems to me, that it was reasonable for the fact finder to conclude that the nurse practitioner signed this first, and that the doctor's signature is a counter signature. Do you dispute that that would be a reasonable interpretation of the form?
I agree that would be a reasonable interpretation of the form. However, if we look at what the manual requirements are, and I think this is where some of the confusion is, the manual does require, as you indicated, that certain people sign the certification of need, a physician being one of them, not a nurse practitioner. There's nothing in the manual that provides that certain individuals must also date it, which is why if we look to the adult... Well, right,
but that physician has to sign it within 24 hours of admission, correct?
That is correct.
All right, so by looking at this form, given that you had the burden of proof and the hearing examiner found it against you, below.
Correct.
How do I look at this form and say, okay, there is a physician signature on here. How do I tell it was within 24 hours of admission?
Because even if he's not the individual person who wrote that date, I believe by putting his signature on the same line with that date, that's indicating that he signed on that date.
Well, how would he countersign it otherwise? I mean,
assume
for a moment a physician comes in 2 days later. But still needs to countersign the form because it's a doctor's order. It has to be signed by a doctor. How does he sign it? He wouldn't write on that line. He'd sign somewhere else and date it differently?
I think it's similar to when I've seen circumstances where two parties are signing an agreement. If for some reason there's only one line, he could have signed beneath and put his own date next to it if it was a date that was different that he was signing on.
Clearly, the hearing examiner did not reach that conclusion. So why is it clearly wrong for him not to have said the physician's signature is not the one that's dated?
Because I think as a professional, a physician signing a document next to a date, where he's co-signing next to a date, I think it's more than reasonable to believe that he's co-signing as saying, I am also signing that this individual requires inpatient care on the date that appears on the line where my signature also appears.
I don't disagree with you that you could reasonably conclude that. The question is, can you also... on this evidence reasonably conclude that isn't the case or may not be the case, in which case you would lose?
I don't think so. I think given what physicians are required to do with their documentation, I think that any reasonable individual looking at this form, in its entirety and specifically looking at the line which you've pointed to, Your Honor, I think would indicate that a physician placing their signature as a counter signature next to a nurse practitioner who has included a date, I think the only reasonable interpretation is he is saying, I am also signing on the same date that appears on the line that is less than a quarter of an inch from where my signature appears on this document. But as you pointed, that is the key issue in this case. It is whether or not the dates and signatures on these forms appear where they belong in order to show that a physician certified in writing the need for this patient, that this patient required inpatient care within 24 hours, as you indicated, of the date of their admission.
There are circumstances where orders in hospitals or history and physical and admission paperwork aren't signed by the doctor for multiple days, any number of reasons. Admission over the phone, nurse practitioner writes the order, doctor doesn't round the next day, doctor rounds 2 days later and signs off 2 days later. That happens.
That may be. I don't work in a hospital, so I can't speak to the frequency with which that happens, if at all. The documents that we're looking at are the documents that DMAS had before them, and those are the ones that we're concerned about. I think looking especially specifically at the document that you referenced, I don't see a way that it can be interpreted that this physician did not intend that the date immediately beside his signature was not the date also applicable to the time that he signed. As we generally walk through, and I'll just, for sake of clarity, walk through again, the only requirements that are found anywhere in the manual or the regulation for a proper documentation of the certification of need for inpatient care or for the 60-day recertification are a certification in writing, timely made, which, as we've discussed, is either at the time of admission or within 24 hours or for a recertification within 60 days that is signed by a physician and that's dated. There's no requirement that the date, the signature, and the certification language appear anywhere within a certain proximity to each other. In fact, the manual, as the circuit court noted, as well as the hearing officer, specifically the manual says there is no way that we're prescribing for any provider to actually make sure this certification is taken care of. As long as these requirements are met, then that's all that's required. Now, a very similar issue was before this case previously in Culpepper versus DMAS. We were before the court almost exactly a year ago on that issue. In that case, the court did find that there was an issue with the documentation, it was a material breach, and that the retraction should be upheld. There's a significant difference here that I think is worth pointing out, and it's that in that case, the issue is whether or not there was any certification language at all. That issue does not present itself here. If we look at the NICU and the pediatric order forms that we were just looking at, they specifically contain language that state hospitalization certified necessary for the following reasons, and whoever the provider is has filled out what that reason is. For the NICU patients, it's generally for reasons of prematurity. For the two adult patients where the electronic form is used, there's also express certification language. It states hospital admission is certified necessary for the following reasons, and beneath that is a bulleted list of whatever the reasons were that the person filling out the form on the computer selected.
Can I interrupt you just so you know? You probably notice the yellow light. You're into your rebuttal, and you're welcome to keep going or handle that as you deem best.
Thank you, Your Honor. So that language is clearly here. The only issue we have in this case is the placement of the dates and the signatures. The circuit court itself acknowledged that these forms are dated in multiple places. Every one of these forms has been signed by a physician. I think looking at the forms in their entirety, none of these forms are longer than 2 pages long. It's very clear. The physician was indicating that they believe these patients needed this care. They expressly certified it using language that this court has previously found to be required. The forms are all signed and dated, and for that reason, we believe that the retraction should be overturned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Beth Guggenheim, and I'm counsel to the Department of Medical Assistance Services, which I will also refer to as DMAS this morning. Earlier this year, this issue was decided in Culpeper Hospital versus DMAS. The issue as here is whether the hospital's documentation met the federal and state requirements for certification of inpatient care. The court first determined that it did not meet the federal and state requirements, and then from there determined that the hospital had breached its provider agreement with DMAS, and pursuant to the terms of the agreement, they were required to repay.
But there is, I mean, one difference is there was no extra certification language. The argument in that case was implicit in the continued care was a certification, whereas here there's actually a box that says hospitalization certified necessary, and then there's a handwritten notation. So that is one difference, right?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor, the reason for the documentation deficiencies are different, but the documents here are no more compliance than the documents.
Well, let me ask you a question about one of them, then, because I have a couple, much as I did for them, I have a couple questions for you, the one at page 333 of the joint appendix.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. If there's a hospitalization certified necessary for the following reasons, I believe it's doctor handwriting, but I think it says extreme prematurity, so there is a reason given. It is signed at the bottom by a physician. It is dated that it was signed on October 23rd, 2000, and whatever the year is, and it matched 2009, and it appears to match the admission date at the top of the form. So that appears to me to be a form that certifies a reason for hospitalization signed by the physician on within 24 hours of the admission. How does that not comply with the manual?
Your Honor, the admission form is dated. Culpeper, they created these forms, and part of the reason they created them was to be in compliance with the certification requirement. So the way that they created them is for the certification, they would have a separate physician signature block and then a separate date block.
Well, I understand that, but they're not required to use any form. Here we have a form that appears on its face to have been signed by the physician within 24 hours of admission that certifies the reason for admission. And so it seems to me that meets all the requirements of the regulation and the manual.
The manual actually provides that, well, of course, the federal regulation is that it occur on the day of admission. And from there, the manual provides that it be separately signed, the certification be dated when it is signed, and that it be an identifiable part of the record. So here you have a certification with a date block, no date in the certification block.
Well, but on multiple other places on the same piece of paper, It has the date, and it's the date of admission. We have the computer-generated date of admission at the top, and we have the date the doctor signed it at the bottom, and in fact actually goes further and times it.
And that's for the admission. So that's for the admission order. But on the admission order, as DMAS allows, there is a certification included. But the admission order is signed and dated. But you don't have the certification dated
but,
as well.
But the signature and the date is a completely separate at the bottom of the form. It doesn't fall within any particular box. Why doesn't that certify to all of that?
Because it goes to, if you look at the certification, it has a date block that they created.
Right, but nothing in the reg that I can find says you have to date it twice, and nothing in the reg says if you want to go above and beyond what the regulation requires, that we're going to deny, you know, we're going
to
order refunds simply because you went beyond the text of the regulation.
There's no way to determine from this document that the federal regulation requires that it occur on the day of admission. And the date of admission is at the bottom, but the date of certification.
But it doesn't say that. It just says there's just simply a line. And it says physicians. Now, I'd probably be with you if at the bottom it said, you know, signature for date of admission or something like that. All it says is physician signature, date, time. So why doesn't that embrace everything? You know, there's all these boxes that are checked and other things. And then, so why should the signature and date be cabined to just admission when it doesn't say that?
Because the separate certification that they decided to put on the admission order, it has the date block that they created was not dated. So a reasonable...
Ms. Guggenheim, if they didn't have a date, if the form was exactly the same, but the date block in the record, y'all had circled the date that's missing.
Yes.
That you contend is missing. If that date block didn't exist, there was no space for the date there, and this form was exactly as it is, would it be compliant?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because it must... The certification must be a separately identifiable part of the admission order. So you have the certification language, you have the separate signature, but there's no way for the auditor to determine if the certification occurred on the date of admission because the agency looks at that. The circuit court agreed that the signature at the bottom is for the admission order, and so is the date. It does not apply to the certification.
Generally, when we sign documents, both in law and, I guess, from letters and common experience, the signature at the bottom of something applies to everything above it within reason. Why doesn't the signature apply to everything?
It's a federal and state requirement that it be a separately identifiable part of the record. And the agency looking at this and the circuit court looked at this and said that the admission order is signed and dated, but the certification that they place the separate date box next to is left empty for a reason. It must be, or could be, because the certification did not occur on the day of admission.
But the circuit court can't reach that finding.
They agreed with the hearing officer's decision. I apologize, Your Honor. Again, for a majority of the certifications, this document that you were looking at on page 333 was used by the provider, was created by them. It is very akin to Culpepper in that the provider is attempting to use the language from their admission order and fill in the missing information for the certification. And then for the recertifications, there are seven patients at issue, and they attempted to use their progress notes for these seven patients to fill in the missing information for the admission or the missing information for the recertifications. That's the exact same situation that happened in Culpepper when the provider attempted to take the admission order and make that the certification. Progress note simply provides the overall status of the patient. It does not recertify the care. in the hospital. The court in Culpeper Hospital looked at the terms of the provider agreement that every provider signs with DMAS before they're able to provide services, and this addresses the provider's argument that because the documentation deficiencies are different, that Culpeper does not apply, but Culpeper is not written that narrowly. Instead, it states, the manual unambiguously requires providers to refund payments made by Medicaid they are found to have failed to maintain any record or adequate documentation to support their claims. Again, the documentation is no more compliant here with the federal and state requirements as it was in Culpeper. St. Mary's also, they confuse the issue of medical necessity. They argue that the services were medically necessary, therefore the agency must pay for those services. It's important to note that for a utilization review, that documentation is reviewed. As the hearing officer and the final agency decision in the circuit court agreed, the quality of care is never the subject of a utilization review. St. Mary's is held to the terms of their provider agreement. As this court reiterated in Culpeper Hospital, courts will not set aside a contractual provision simply because it constitutes a hard bargain. And it's important to note, too, as far as DMAS's responsibility, they don't have the authority to ignore any of these documentation deficiencies. The federal regulations require that state Medicaid agencies have a hospital utilization review process in place. And they
let me ask you, if on the place, going back, just the, a lot of these forms are similar, page 333, if you had a notation at the bottom that said the signature applies to all the above boxes or something like that. Would that?
If there was a statement that was clear that date also was the date of certification, then yes, because the manual provides that as long as it's an identifiable part of the record, it is acceptable because it does give the providers much flexibility in how to meet those requirements.
Can you point me to any other place in law where a signature at the bottom of a document doesn't incorporate everything above it?
I would point to this requirement. It's a separate Medicaid is a it's just a different area. The certifications are required by federal law, and that's.
But right, but it seems to me that what Judge McCullough asked you, if we put that explicitly at the bottom, that implicitly that is the case. I mean, we would assume from the signature that that's what it means.
And it's important to know with these audits, the agency can't infer intent. It needs to be explicit. It needs to be clear what the providers intended. And so the auditors can't infer the intent. It needs to be clear from the documentation. And it's also important to note, too, that not all of these documents were even signed by a physician. And then for the recertifications for the seven patients, there was no recertification language. There was nothing compliant with the recertifications at issue.
Which, interestingly enough, could have been done by a nurse practitioner, if I understand the regulations.
For the recertifications. Again, with DMAS's ability, they are not able to just turn a blind eye to the documentation deficiencies. The federal regulations require that they have a utilization review process in place specifically for their certifications. If they fail to do so, state Medicaid agencies are at a risk for a reduction in federal funding. Again, this case presents the same issue that was before this court in Culpeper Hospital. The question is, does St. Mary's documentation meet federal and state requirements for hospital certification? It does not, and therefore they're held to the terms of their provider agreement, and they must refund the agency the overpayment amount. If there are no other questions, DMAS.
No questions. No. No, thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
Roughly 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just briefly, Your Honor, I wanted to quote from one section of the manual that I think speaks to whether or not there does need to be that separate date in the certification block, and also why the recertifications were found in the progress notes. I'm reading from page 35 of the joint appendix, the very bottom paragraph. This is the 2006 version of the manual, but the 2009 version contains something substantially similar. Quote, certification and recertification statements may be entered on or included in forms, notes, or other records a physician normally signs in caring for a patient, or a separate form may be used. each certification and recertification statement is to be separately signed by the physician. It doesn't say that they're to be separately dated. If DMAS wanted a separate date requirement, that could have been also included in this clarification statement where they're requiring a separate signature, which does appear in that signature block on the certification forms that we looked at today. Your Honors, I just wanted to also briefly address the issue of substantial compliance. I know the Court's very familiar with that topic, and as addressed in the Culpepper opinion, has indicated that it does apply in cases such as this. I certainly think that this is a case where if it is found that there wasn't strict compliance with the document requirements, I think St. Mary's has certainly substantially complied. Every document we've looked at contains, on the certification forms, an actual block stating that they were certifying the need for this inpatient care. Dates appear multiple times. The hearing officer has conceded that, in his opinion. The circuit court conceded that there are dates all over these documents. They just may not appear close enough to the signature that the circuit court may want to see, but that's not a requirement anywhere in the regulation or in the manual. And there is a separate signature showing that the physician was certifying that this patient required inpatient care, and that's why they were being admitted either to the NICU, the pediatric ICU, or to the general medicine floor. St. Mary's clearly maintained adequate documentation to support its claim to be paid for these, for the care that these patients receive. While the recertification documents may look a bit different, if anything, that would only have required the retraction of payments made after the 60-day point. It wouldn't have done anything to go back and require St. Mary's to refund money for patients who they initially certified that these patients required to be admitted either on the date of their birth or the date of admission shown on their forms. Absent any other questions, Your Honor.
No, thank you very much. We'll come down to Greek Council and take up the next.